Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's badlandsranch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
Save big money on your next project right now at Menards. From smoke and carbon monoxide alarms to fire extinguishers and more, Kidde Home Safety Products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Smoke and carbon monoxide alarms are perfect for your living spaces and doubles the detection and protection. Save big money on all Kidde products at Menards. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Is there a way to not be generic off the get-go? You know, are we being too unfair of going, how do you get super original from the start? Holy fuck, this is good. A small group of individuals known as the memory keepers, both the monetary cost of the strain on their conscience.
Monetary.
What did I say?
Monetary.
No, I didn't. Da, 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 da. Welcome back, folks, to another Tutor Ramble episode. I'm one of your hosts, Austin.
And I'm your other host, Richard.
Today we have a submission-like contest. We do these every so often on the channel. And you know what we did today, Rich? This whole concept, the idea.
See, I do, but I'm going to pretend to be the idiot that doesn't know what's going on for our YouTube channel.
For world-building purposes.
For world-building purposes,
you have to have the mentor character that walks.
Exactly. I'm the ignorant vessel that the audience must go through.
We're at chapter 7.
Tell me, what is going on today?
Let me tell you. So we posted out on Instagram, Twitter, on community posts on YouTube, and we reached out saying, hey, we're doing a world building competition. Submit to us in 250 words or less your world building idea. That could be a magic system you have, a culture, a history, flora, fauna, a creature, some cool thing, multiple things if you could fit it in 250 words. So that all these submissions that we're doing, we're polling, taking this all, and we, Rich and I, are going to judge your submissions and determine a winner, and the winner gets three of our custom-made bookmarks. We'll send it to you. It'll be awesome. We love our bookmarks, but it just as a gift from our merch shop, so that'll be cool. Now, for these submissions, I will say all of the patrons who submitted got an automatic entry in because they support us. Had to give it to the patrons. Others were more so kind of luck of the draw. Some people that we knew, some people that were like, you know, I didn't specifically...
If your submission didn't get picked and wasn't read today, that's on him.
It's completely on me.
It's his fault.
It's completely on me.
You don't get to blame me this time.
It's my fault this time, okay? I'll take this one for the team. So
it's great when someone takes all the responsibility, and then when something good happens, I step in. It's like, oh, this was because of me too. All the responsibility and none of the praise.
Take the good, remove the bad.
Of course, always.
That's most companies' PR. That's how it works.
That is generally how to be a manager.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so our whole plan for this episode, we had over 50, 60 submissions, something in that number. To make this work in one episode, we are using 25 of them. So there will be 25 world-building ideas. If you're listening to this and you're a writer looking for some inspiration, don't steal their idea, but something to be cool of, like, oh.
Don't steal their idea individually. Take two of their ideas, combine them together. Now it's yours.
It's now unique and original.
Exactly.
It's the Wheel of Time. It's Red Rising does the same thing. Everything. Yep. So what Rich and I are going to do here, okay, Rich, we talked about this briefly. You remember this, yeah? So
No, please. Tell
okay,
me.
So here's what we're going to do. Each each one, instead of having a bracket-like system where we have one faces the other, we pick a winner. Another one faces the other, we pick a winner. And then at the end, we go to round two of the bracket. We're not going to do that because that can get repetitive where we're talking about the same world again, going, okay, this one that we talked about versus this one that we talked about, which is better. Instead, we're going to go through the 25 of these. We're not going to repeat any until the end, where what we're doing is we'll pick out one of the entries, and Rich and I will give it a star rating out of five. So
following our actual star rating that we normally do with, you know, 3 being neutral, 3.5 good.
In a very dumbed down form of, we're not going to give the same thing of, oh, this is the Lord of the Rings 5 stars, but we will give five stars. It won't be all of them, but some will deserve it. Maybe we'll see. And so then what we'll do is we'll add our score together of, let's say I gave something a 4, you gave something a 4. All right. That one got an 8 out of 10 for that entry. What we'll do at the end of that is see which submission got the highest score. Whichever one got the highest score wins. However, if there's a tie, then we'll have to pick between those winners. So that's what we're going to do. We're going to go over these once, and then at the end, if there's a tie for the best, we'll talk about those bests.
Sounds good.
Okay. Rich?
Let's give us our first one.
Are you ready for this? Okay. The very first one, this is from KJ Woe Book Reviews. He's a patron of ours. Mm-hmm. He was actually the first to submit for this contest. Had to go first for him.
Lightning fingers.
Lightning, yes. I did this in submission order as well, so that's kind of how the order works. Mm-hmm. So, KJ Book Reviews, this is his world for you all. Get nice and cozy. Here it is.
Read off.
Actually, right before I do this, I forgot to ask you one question.
Okay.
Last question
is... Tease them a little further.
Last question, because I was looking at my notes here. Last question for you was, how will you be judging the worlds itself? To you, when we're giving this 250-word entry, what to you is of quality? Is it just cool concept, or is there something more to it than that? When giving the Rich judge?
Generally, cool factors always there.
Yeah.
But normally, it makes me curious to know more. I think that's the number one quality, is I have to want to know more about this world.
Yeah.
That breaks it down. I want to also feel teasing of, oh, there is some depth and intrigue and nuance to it of... It's not just a gimmick. It's more than a gimmick. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, hey, what about a world, but up is down? It's like, okay, more. What else? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I do. Okay. I think when I was thinking this through, I was going, okay, the one to me that will be the 5 star is something where I could imagine a story going infinite directions of, oh, what if this? What if that?
Also, I think potential to be like, oh, this could be like a 10-book series.
Yes.
That's how awesome this world could be, that you could have not just one story, but multiple.
Yeah. Yeah. So that curiosity element, how good the idea itself, are there cool limits and are there cool, does it put characters in scenarios you want to see them in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. This is the first one. Right before I get that first one, our sponsor. No. So this is the first book review. Not book review. This is from KJ Woe Book Reviews. Go check out his YouTube channel. He's also a patron of ours. This is his world building idea. Imagine a vast ocean, but instead of typical waters, it's covered with massive lily pads, some large enough to hold entire villages. The lily pads vary in size, with some barely large enough for a single family and others forming floating cities. The native people have adapted to this unique environment by moving from one floating island to the next, constantly in search of food and safety. Their lives revolve around fishing beneath the pads, diving deep into the dark waters where strange creatures lurk, and using makeshift boats or even the pads themselves to travel. Various tribes live across the pads, each with their own customs and ways of surviving in the shifting, dangerous world. Some are nomadic, moving frequently to follow the ocean's currents, while others build up more permanent settlements on the larger pads. Since the pads are living organisms, they shift and grow unpredictably, sometimes stranding villages or separating families. The balance of survival is delicate, as resources are limited and the ocean's depths hold mysteries that the people dare not explore too far. This lily pad centric world where the land itself is a living organism. What do you think of that? A lot of focus on the setting here too.
Yeah. Cool setting. Cool setting. Yeah. Reminds me of a couple different ideas, but now water. You know what I mean? It's honestly, it brings me back to Sunlit Man a little bit, but similar scenario, but a completely opposite environment.
Okay.
You haven't read that Sunlit Man yet, have you?
No.
Fair enough. People who are watching have read it, know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I like the idea. I don't know about, like, I think there's a good story there. Is there a 10-book saga there? So I think this is good. So I'm going to give this one a 3.5.
I like that rating. So I want to be a little more generous. I'll give it 3.75 because I'm a good setting guy. If you give me a good setting, I like the possibilities with these floating lily pads and the plots that you can kind of create with this. Because automatically he was given some suggestions of, oh, it could separate people with the living organism itself. I want to know more about it. The lily pads, is there more of a lore of why are they there? Why, what kind of world can create something like this? So I'll give it 3.75.
Okay, cool.
You gave it 3.5. So
he teased at the end there of like the mysteries beneath the ocean, which is always good.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So that the score for the very first for KJ Woe book reviews is 7.25 out of 10 because that's our total together. So that's how this works. This is how the rest of the video will go. And I'm about to make people so pissed off right now.
Good.
Because we have to do this because we're about to hit the 10-minute mark. Here's a cut to our sponsor. If you are an author, especially in the sci-fi fantasy realm, or a D&D game master player, you will want to check out the sponsor of this episode, World Anvil.
At worldanvil.com, you can create an account now for free and use their novel planning tools and writing software to map out your plot, characters, and every world-building detail you can imagine.
You can create interactive maps, family trees, timelines, and automatic linking that can make your rambling and meandering minds, like ours, make more sense of your actual plot or whatever kind of game or world you're designing. It satisfies the character first person, like me, who wants to see a character's flaws, wants, needs, personalities, all their skills mapped out. And I love it.
And a world-building first person like me who wants to see an intricate timeline of historical events, the geography of the world, and the differences between cultures, every tool they have is designed to make your world organized and give you tools that you can't really use on a simple Google Doc.
Or Word.
You could, but much harder.
It's way harder.
But for example, they have map-making tools that allow you to map out the landscapes, drop pins and locations, and even create a fog of war effect for you D&D fans.
You can browse their features for days and still find useful tools. Highly, highly recommend checking them out. This is a sponsor that I reached out to because I just loved using it. I said, hey, please sponsor us. I use you guys anyways. This would be great. I can attest, great site. Just go check them out. It's called worldanvil.com. If you want to improve your novel writing, your campaign management, they have all sorts of tools. And if you like what you see and you want access to even more features, use our link in the description below to go to worldanvil.com and use the code RAMBLE, that's RAMBLE, RAMBLE, to get 51% off for a yearly subscription.
Go ahead, check out the link in the description below and back to the episode.
All right, we're back. Please check out World Anvil. They're actually awesome. So please, they were so kind to sponsor us. But now we're getting back to the second entry. This is from Santino. Do you want to read this off?
I'll read it.
Okay, yep. Here we go.
Picture an endless vast landscape of cornfield height grass. The only way to cross it is by airship. Why? These grass fields are as sharp and thin and sturdy as razor blades. Only the most hardened traveler can make their way through them alone, unless they run into the indigenous people of the grasslands. This race of people live underground and use their environment to their advantage. They craft extremely light yet sturdy and durable armor by cutting blades of grass from the root and wrapping it around their bodies in a way that enables high mobility and speed. And this one for Austin here.
Yeah.
They craft Red Rising-esque whips out of the grass as well. This race is similar to the Aiel or the Fremen in terms of relentless and brutal combat. They believe blood is of the earth and deserves to claim it once someone has been killed. So they have rituals revolving around that.
I like it.
I like it too.
I really like it.
I will say, the question, it immediately came to me.
What's your question?
Is this me being a nitpicker?
Of course it is, but yes. Probably what are you going
to say? On one hand, it is, you know, no one can really travel it alone. It's very difficult. You have to use airships, like big technology. And yet the people of the grasslands are literally using the blades of grass as armor and going through it. So I'm going like, that seems a lesser form. Like, can't most people figure that out?
Oh, is it? So my understanding here is that the people that live in the grasslands have it figured out.
Yeah, but right? I'm also, that seems pretty basic of like, shoot, why doesn't everyone have that figured out?
I imagine
out?
They lived there for so long, they figured it out. You know, they have the knowledge from the grasslands, right?
Intuitionally, how can the grasslands survive if it the grass itself destroys itself. Like, that would make sense of use the grass to defend against, because it's clearly not destroying itself, its own crop. I don't know. That's me being the nitpicker of going, like, why? Yeah. Why are they the only ones that figured it out?
That's part of the mystery, maybe.
I guess.
That's part of the world. How did they figure it out and not others?
Given, you know, like, an actual in-depth going into it, like, there's probably more. There could be a really good reason on why.
I'm telling you, if Santino had 300 words, he would have sold you.
Yeah, exactly.
He would have had that extra 50 words to just get you there.
Maybe the grass on its own is, like, super brittle, and you have to, like, keep the grass alive. Yeah. And it has to be living armor. So, like, they tried to do it where you use grass as armor, but as soon as it's cut, it's dead. Yeah. So maybe you have to pull it out of the ground with the bulb, like the root still attached, and you have to feed it water to keep it alive on you for it to be armor. That's my idea of, like, why did people not figure this out? But whatever. It's fine.
Sounds like you're about to give this another 3-5.
No, I'm going to be negative. Ooh. I'm going to be a 3.
It's good.
Neutral, because I immediately had the question of, does this world make sense?
That's fair, but I think this is a good time to say, hey, you all submitted these. Thank you for the submissions. Yeah. We're also not going to hold back. If we don't like these, we're going in, right?
Setting-wise,
we gotta
cool.
Go.
Yeah. Also, he's pandering. He's pandering perfectly to us, and I appreciate it.
No, to me.
Pander.
He said the Red Rising to me.
No, and then he also said the Aiel.
Oh, he did say Aiel. Yep. That's right.
So I get it. He's pandering.
Listen.
It's appreciated.
This just might be me and my ego. Mm-hmm. Another 3-7-5. Because he mentioned Red Rising, and I really like the idea of the Blades of Grass making it the armor, kind of structuring that into your weapons of war. And another setting featured one. So you'll see, I have a bias towards settings, but I will give it doesn't. So still KJ Woe is in first, because 3 plus 3.75 is 6.75.
There's also a very good explanation that I didn't even really think of until just now.
Yeah.
Is this endless vast landscape of grasslands
yep.
could be an area that people just go, like, it's not worth the trouble going through it. And so most people live in a different area. The grasslands is completely separate. And it's just like, why go through all the hassle of traveling it when we just take an airship?
I think it leaves a lot of mysteries. Yeah.
Good work. I don't know.
Sticking with the 3?
I'm sticking with 3.
Wow. Santino, you did not win, because KJ Wolves are, so far, we still got the first submission.
Yeah.
Is 7.25 is the score to beat.
I'm wondering if I'm ever, if I had any of these, am I going to give it a bad score? Like, it's a bad idea. It's terrible. Ooh. I wonder if that's going to happen.
Oh, like a 1.5. Now, will any get a 5?
I think so.
We got 25 of these. There's going to be a 5
in here.
There's
got to be one.
Yeah. The third entry. Here we go. This is from Majd. And Majd is our bully. My bully. Yep. The one who bullied me to read First Law.
Many, many emails.
So Majd, this one's for you. We're going to read this off. He's continuing to bully. So here it is. This is from Majd. There was a time when the realm of Morovia was united as one, a creation born from the love of two divine beings, Thalira and Valdor. Together, they molded the world, shaping its landscapes and breathing life into it. It was a harmonious and prosperous world where magic and nature coexisted in perfect balance. However, the divine love that birthed Morovia began to sour. Thalira and Valdor, once inseparable, fell into a bitter and irreplaceable conflict. Their divine battle shook the very foundations of the world they had created and culminated in a cataclysmic clash of power that led to their mutual demise. As the gods' final blows were exchanged, the very fabric of Morovia was torn asunder. The world fractured into two identical yet subtly distinct copies, with neither being aware of the other's existence. But the veil between the two worlds began to thin, and a strange phenomena started to occur. People from both realms began experiencing vivid memories of the lives they never lived. These false memories crept into their minds, mixing with their genuine experiences and driving many to the brink of madness. Holy fuck, this is good. A small group of individuals known as the Memory Keepers believed that something far more profound was happening. They uncovered ancient texts and prophecies that hinted at the true nature of Morovia's affliction. They believed that the two worlds were slowly merging, and if the process reached its culmination, both realms would cease to exist, spelling doom for all who inhabited them. I'm giving it 4-5.
Okay.
I'm 4-5.
I wanted to be negative.
Spectacular.
Everything in the beginning, I'm like, I've seen it before. I think I may even give it sub 3.
No.
Because I've seen it before.
The two worlds colliding, you know?
Like, okay, the two gods battling, yeah. Leave.
The two gods fighting and creating two worlds.
The two worlds, I'm like, okay, yeah. A little bit more interesting.
And then what's he hit you with, though?
Oh, yeah.
Then he hits you with
the memories colliding, the
characters from each world starting to go mad.
Also, way better than just complete multiverse of, like, anything's possible. No, there's two. There's two worlds. I can keep track of that.
Even though Everything Everywhere All At Once is a perfect movie, even with that being said.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing.
Marvel screwed up the multiverse. Everything Everywhere All At Once.
It's hard to take it a multiverse seriously.
Yes.
With two worlds, I can take both seriously.
Exactly.
And that's interesting.
And I love...
Lots of potential for, like, characters that, like...
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah. Wonderful dichotomy between a hero, a villain, which is the same person, but different lives.
Yep.
Or, you know, you can have a great romance across the veil. Like, ooh. I see it easily. Like, oh, which world still survive? You know.
How do you trust your own senses at a certain point? Because are you going to mad? How will the madness...
I would. Give it a 5. Mm-hmm. I would. But the beginning, I think, lacks imagination.
Are you going to 4-5 as well?
4-5, yeah.
4-5. We both give it 4-5. That's going to be
spectacular.
Tough score to
but
beat.
But that beginning needs work. I think come up with a different situation. Like,
it seems like in a land where da-da-da. It seemed like that at the beginning. Yeah. In a land where...
Two gods
battle.
Something a little bit more fresh.
I'm with you.
Because everything else, great.
We're on the same page.
Okay.
This is fantastic. Maj, go write that book.
I wanted to bully you because you've been bullying Austin, but...
No, you were not going to defend me. Don't lie for a damn second.
I was going to be harsh, but I couldn't.
My bully's a really good world builder.
I can bully you. No one else. That's the nature of friendship. Only I get to poke fun at him.
I hate that he made a good world. This sucks.
I know. It's terrible.
All right, that's a 9 out of 10 score. So that looks like that's... So of the entries right now, Maj is in the lead. We have plenty more to
all
go
right,
into.
You can stop watching the video now. We peaked too early.
All right, the fourth entry here. Do you want to read this one? You have to read this one.
Oh, this is from our best patron member. And all the people who are watching us and support us, we thank you. But understand, all of you are less than. All of you are... There is a hierarchy of people. And all of you are below... Orkishdad. Orkishdad is our best patron member. Sorry, but I'm not really sorry. So we're going to read off his idea.
This is his entry.
Yep.
Here you go.
All right. When our mother, the departed, welcomes you into her embrace, you must leave your vessel behind. But that doesn't mean your vessel can't be put to use. Should you choose, you can donate your body in service to the church. By choosing service, the bones that once housed your spirit are animated by the knowledge of the saints. The saints are those that have worked to achieve mastery over whatever they pursued in life, such as the saints of carpentry, smithing, and gardening. A fragment of their mastery may enter the empty vessel of another to perform a task needed by the city. Such a vessel is called a relic. Relics are used to fill the needs of the people. A smith might have a relic in their shop swinging a hammer. A relic might be seen repairing a broken wagon. You might even see a relic tending to the gardens on the church grounds. If there is a need, all you need is a saint to master said need and a willing vessel to become a relic. But what happens when the city is threatened? Will the church provide relics to aid? Is there a saint of war? Can those who have joined our mother's embrace still serve to protect those they have left behind? A world like this is primed to ask questions about what it means to dedicate your life to mastering a craft, as well as the ramifications of having your profession taken over by the dead.
That's really cool.
That's really good.
That's really cool.
What
do you like the most about it? Because I know you like your religious aspects in books, mm-hmm. when they do it well.
Yeah, exactly. The main thing about it is, like, it is one concept. But it's just really well thought out and well explained. I just think he wrote it so well.
Yeah.
Especially introduction is such a good, like, back of the book blurb right there. Like,
it feels like he might have edited a blurb he had for something.
Yeah. It's well presented.
Yes.
Of anything, like, that's presentation, top notch.
If we were on MasterChef, we would go, you know, if we're tasting the food, the taste, so presentation, 5 out of 5 plate.
Yes, exactly.
So now we taste the plate.
How's the taste? Yeah, how's the substance of it?
Yeah, yeah.
What are your thoughts?
So I like his finishing line convinced me a bit even more because it compelled me to think about the thought provoking, the message that would be seen in this world of how important the dead become, and the end question he had here of a world like this is primed to ask questions about what it means to dedicate your life to mastering craft and what the ramifications of having your profession taken over by the dead.
Yeah.
So
and
that
so one saint that masters it could bring alive all of these different relics. And so all it takes is one master and look at that. Your trade is basically gone.
Now, I will say, of course, he couldn't get more into it in the 250 words here, but I am curious to learn more about what are some of the mechanics. How the details of how it works, because I think that would be a big factor in whether or not I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm in. Because since there's a lot of, what are the consequences? What are more of the limits of this world? Now, I imagine he has that in mind. But
part of the limit seems to be it is just more efficient than other people. And so that's automation. Anyway, that's the whole idea with it. So great, great vehicle to talk about a real world topic that's pretty timeless. All the words and just how it's the nuances of it, of the saint, a saint of war, a saint of carpentry, and bestowing upon a relic, and just how if the idea was just necromancy but for work and jobs, like, okay, sure, neat idea, but it's the presentation of their
You know what I like about it too, that last question, I guess what this whole concept gets you thinking about is it's a fantasy way of talking about AI.
Yeah.
So what happens when
more now.
What happens when technology and AI starts taking jobs? You know, it's the magic. It's not literally AI, but it's a magic fantasy way of doing this. I like where that can go. I want to toss out your score. Or want me to go first? It's Orcish Dad. Don't be too biased.
I can't be too biased.
I'll give my honest answer to this. It's 4.25 for me.
That's all I was thinking. Yeah. The same thing.
It's really great. It's really great.
That's really great.
That means he gets 4.25. You gave it as well. Yep. So that's an 8.5 score under Majd, who still's got that 9. Yeah. So
we may by the end, like,
we'll have another 4.5.
We'll look around. We'll see. Maybe we change scores. Who knows? We'll see.
Okay.
We can readjust if we think.
Okay. So this,
that's a good one.
This next one, Orcish, great entry. This next one is from another one of our patrons, Gecko. Hello, Gecko. Thank you. And Gecko, this is their. This is what the world they came up with. Okay, so Gecko says, dragons are the amalgamation of cats, lizards, and when needed, war horses. Oh, I like that intro. Okay. They can talk both verbally and with their bonded riders physically,
psychically.
Psychically. Thank you. The good thing you have that on screen. Yes. Yeah. With their bonded riders psychically. I'll restart that. So they can talk both verbally and with their bonded riders psychically. Some are friendly and some are assholes depending on the breed. Different breeds come from different areas of the world. There are those that live in the ocean cities with the Aquaham, who until recently were thought to exist only in legend. Desert dragons who live in the Mazir region survive with very little sustenance, kind of like camels. Winged dragons can use their wings to dry riders after they are submerged. The ones without wings can use their hot breath to achieve the same result. Some are overgrown hatchlings and love to play with their riders and other dragons. Some even tolerate their riders' love interest and family members. Little is known of their nest cultures by non-bonded people, but bonded riders are included in all rituals and traditions. When Taliani is bonded to Sasha, she introduces him to a world he never knew possible, and the dragons are not happy with the way Volkovia are using them. They want their freedom, and Sasha's boyfriend, Kolya, might be their only hope. You know what it reminds me of?
Quite a few things.
Fourth Wing.
Actually, it reminds me more, like, Fourth Wing's kind of there.
But
there's also Michael Miller's book.
Before you
before you ascendant, list,
Before you list more off, I say that too because Gecko messaged me saying it was inspired off Fourth Wing.
Fair enough.
So Gecko was saying this is this. The Gecko was saying that it's a better version of Fourth Wing that when reading Fourth Wing wanted to come up with this instead. So it was going, you know, I guess was addressing the complaints of Fourth Wing and wanted to make own kind of dragon stuff. So what do you think? What's your rating? What would you say about this world?
I guess this is my bias of I've read now many different
lots of dragons,
dragon rider fantasies, and for the most part, the world itself has not impressed me.
Yeah,
for near basically all of them. All of them to me feel in some ways the same.
Honestly, one of the cool ones that they just if he did it better, Thousand Deaths of Ardor Ben had a concept that was cool, but then just was.
Poor execution.
Implementation, yeah.
Yeah, the reason why I liked, help me out the name.
With who?
Our buddy. Our buddy came on, I'm trying to remember.
Which person? We have a lot of people come on.
Indie author.
On book. The indie roundtable?
Yes.
For which of the books? Was it with Dismonti?
Nope.
Not Dismonti, was it Tanner's? Tanner's with
yes,
TDRL, Titan's Nest.
Titan's Nest, well-crafted world of, like, it's solid.
Yeah.
But to me, that wasn't the draw. I've seen similar-ish, like, worlds. What was interesting to me was the characters and, like, the plot. There's a twist in the beginning of going, oh, interesting. How is this going to go? This seems like a subversion of the standard story I would hear. So that's what I liked about it. So, I will say I think I'm going to give it a 2.5. A little disappointed.
Disappointed.
I wanted more. I think Gecko could do better.
Okay, you know Gecko?
Like give me a something. You know, something to latch on to. Something to latch on to instead of cuz that I imagine I could get into the characters, but not so much the world.
So I might as well not rate it because even if I give it a 5, wouldn't be in first. So I guess I just
got to give it a rating. Do it.
You know why? Because I was going to give 2.25.
Okay.
I'm similar with you. I think with the dragons, it takes a lot to get me with dragons.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those big, you see it ubiquitous, you see it in a bunch of stories. So there's got to be something to latch on to. They go, ah.
Yeah.
So
for the most part, aren't there only two types of dragon stories? There's too many dragons, and then there's not dragons. Enough dragons. There's never the perfect amount of dragons.
You're never whelmed with dragons.
No.
There's never a whelming amount. It's always over or underwhelmed of dragons. Yeah. Now, this next one we have is from Gideon Kane. Okay. And
great name, by the way. Yeah. That's just a strong name.
Gideon the Ninth, right?
Gideon Kane. Like, I just like, it works.
A lot to live up to with what you have created here. Now Gideon has been a
live up to your name. Yeah. I hope it does.
Gideon's been not a patron, but a long time. I've seen Gideon comment on her stuff a bunch. So Gideon, thank you for submitting this. Do you want me to read this because it's a tougher how I put it down on the sheet, or do you want to go ahead?
I mean, I could read the same thing as you are.
Okay. You got it.
There are gems that when crushed have different reactions, but they are too dangerous to be used without an item to harness their power. The gems go as follows. Heat, cold, light, air. I want to add more, but I'm still working on it. Basically, these are how the world runs, even with simple things like light bulbs and fridges, or used for weapons like a heated sword. The reason you can't just break the gems is the direct interaction with it can cause fatal disease, though there are some people that overcame some of the diseases. It created a genetic mutation that passed down to their children, leaving them with uncontrollable effects related to the gems they were exposed to. Last section gave it more intrigue. You know, like, beginning part, similar thing of like, okay, power gems, general elemental stuff, like, okay. General, seen it before.
Okay.
The mutation stuff, okay, that's more interesting. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think the air, light, those elements, I think I naturally go to Avatar, Last Airbender, when I'm thinking Earth, Water, Air, Fire. But then the added twist at the end, a little bit of the, I guess, I'm thinking almost nuclear reaction.
Mm-hmm.
So having some exposure to these makes it interesting. But I think generally for this, I think it looks like Gideon said here, I want to add more, but still working on it. This looks like a work in progress.
Yeah.
So for me, I think work in progress, keep working at it.
Yeah.
I think it's got a hint of something, and I'll still flat neutral until I learn more. I'll give a 3 for this.
Just because it's a work in progress, a 2.75.
I'll lower to that.
Yeah.
But what's 2.75? What's 2.75?
You got it.
5.5. Ah, okay. Yeah. Good maths. All right. There we go. So we still got the lead is Maj with 9.
Yes.
Okay. We got to see that next one that pulls us.
I don't want Maj to win. I don't want him to win.
He's a bully.
Why do so many dogs die before their time? Actress and dog activist Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete by Badlands Ranch is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including premium protein-packed beef, nutrient-dense organ meat, heart-healthy salmon, gut-healthy vegetables, and several superfoods vital to your dog's health. And because high-heat cooking can add unhealthy things to your dog's food, Superfood Complete uses air drying, so it gets cooked low and slow. This means it has the convenience of kibble, but the health benefits of whole foods. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible benefits, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 right now to get up to 50% off your order and a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today. All dogs are unique. Your dog's results can and will vary.
You earned a degree in the behavioral health field because you wanted to make a difference. And you're needed now more than ever. Through the new Great Minds Fellowship Program, recent Ohio graduates may be able to receive as much as $20,000 in student loan support when working full-time at a community behavioral health center. Apply before November 15th. To learn more about program eligibility, visit highered.ohio.gov. That's highered.ohio.gov.
Holy, he's mean.
He's mean.
And he recommends good ideas. He recommends good books too. I mean,
he does
First
recommend
Law was
good
really
books.
Good.
Yeah. But he's mean. I don't want him to win.
This next one is from Tom with an H. And this is his Instagram. It's at gamedesigner_Tom. He has this whole D&D world he does. And if anybody wants to go check out his Instagram. Tom, thank you for submitting this. So this is his D&D world. So he has a lot more than this. This is just him putting it into a short form so we could say it here.
I have a high expectation.
Okay, here we go. Nerotha is a grimdark world forged in the fires of endless conflict where power corrupts and war shapes every corner of society. Magic is rare and poorly understood, and the land's history is overshadowed by the rise of the Aurorium Empire, a ruthless dictatorship led by the would-be God King, Astel, whose ambitious to conquer the free provinces has plunged the realm into political intrigue and constant bloodshed. The world of Nerotha revolves around Astel's brutal empire. Before his rise, magic could only be cast by those chosen by the gods. However, Astel's introduction of gemstones known as Glint revolutionized magic, allowing mortals to infuse these stones into their bodies and harness their power. This innovation created a deadly power struggle between the Aurorium Empire and the Free Provinces, with the ongoing theme being that the power of Glint corrupts and destroys its users. My goal is to release D&D 5K, and the rest is about his D&D stuff.
We'll read it out.
That represent the different factions and races of Nerotha, slowly building out the world piece by piece. I draw a lot of inspiration from Warhammer 40K to set a similarly dark tone, but in a way that suits D&D's mechanics. That was part of the email, so...
I know, yeah. Yeah. So people can understand.
Yeah, yeah. But fair,
good to
fair
read
enough.
The whole thing out.
Yeah. I'm going to read all the other emails now, to be fair.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people did say stuff, sorry, we can't say everything.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You were trying to keep the word count.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Understood. Yeah.
So what do you think?
Now, here's maybe the unfairness of giving a 250-word...
Yep.
He described something large but wasn't able to go into minutia details.
You can see how it works as a D&D world, the setup there.
Exactly. But overall, like, because he's zoomed out, it's magic world, brutal empire, and magic is now used, like, can be used by gemstones. And, like, there's kind of the difference between, the pure users of magic and the corrupted users of magic. That's kind of the struggle that you see. Seeing that in a couple different things. So, 10,000 view world, good overall. I'd want more details, but of course, we gave a limit. So
yeah, and I would say too with that limit, it seems like melazin in a good and bad way. Mm-hmm. You know, where melazin, I didn't fully grasp it because it was wide. A lot's going on, but I guess for these submissions, I think the benefit to a submission like this is to go super narrow. Where Orkish's submission, for example, going narrow into one thing to okay, got an aspect of the world, now can draw out
to hook me into like, do I want to know more?
Care about one thing first.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To this, like, the nugget that I guess I'm supposed to more latch onto, like, the question of how is how the magic works, I guess. Which I'm not disinterested, but I'm also not interested. So I'm thinking about a 3 for me.
The gemstone.
I'm pretty neutral.
Yeah, the gemstones and the change in magic, how it's more usable, and the gemstones infusing your body is a cool touch with it, too.
Jade City.
Okay, yeah.
That's one of the factors is, like, jade is the magic source that they use, and it has to be touching your body.
Yeah.
And so people wear jade rings, and that's different. Touching their body, they're allowed to use magic. Whole thing.
That I see why it would be a D&D character could be put in that, and so the gems and what you use, your character itself can work well in this world, but I'll be with you. 3 stars.
Yeah.
Neutral. And everybody go check out his stuff, because he has a site where he has all sorts of D&D stuff and world building. So check him out, Tom, and at @gamedesigner_Tom, Thom. So awesome stuff. But we'll give that for a score. Looks like we still got Maj in first. Here's the next one, okay?
Come on.
This next one is from our guy, Josh, another patron. Hello, Josh.
Hey, Josh.
You want to read this one off, Rich?
Yeah, I'll read this one. The sun and moon were once two gods living in harmony, keeping the world balanced. The sun with its light, the moon with its darkness. Until one day when the moon murdered the sun, sending the world into an eternal darkness with sunlight gone forever. The moon, now left unchecked, has unleashed a sickness upon the earth that travels through the shadows and the affliction known as the shade sickness. It perverts and destroys a person physically and mentally, turning them into a dark zombie.
My bad. I clicked the button. I screwed Rich up. That was on me.
That's on him.
This is the second blame I'm taking this episode.
You take all the responsibility.
Yeah.
All right. The shade sickness perverts and destroys a person physically and mentally, turning them into a dark zombie-like servant for the moon. Think the corruption of the Nazgul mixed with the rage virus from 28 days later. The world has almost completely been taken over by this plague, save for one island where a mysterious and magical fire seems to keep the shadows and the sickness within it at bay. Survivors on the island use this fire for everything, making sure to keep their homes and families safe within its glow. But as the fire starts to dwindle out, slowly but surely condemning the remnants of civilization to a dark hell, it's up to our main characters to venture out onto the mainland to attempt to discover the secrets of this magic fire and save humanity. On their journey, they will encounter the Shade Sick, the mysteries of their world, and maybe even the moon himself, intent on stomping out humanity's last hope forever. Cool idea. I'm a big fan of the concept where, like, the villain's already won, and now the heroes are living in the world after
the Mistborn.
Exactly. Yeah. I like that kind of trope. So the beginning was like, okay, again, the same thing of, like, the two gods fighting over and, like, fair enough, but then the moon's won, and then I'm thinking, like, okay, how is a planet supposed to survive with
question
that light?
For you there, because a general complaint we've had being negative is the first paragraph, first sentence, we're going, yeah, at first seemed generic.
Yes.
Then I got specific. Is there a way to not be generic off the get-go? You know, are we being too unfair of going, how do you get super original from the start?
I don't know. I mean,
because maybe it takes time. Because
Orkish Dad.
Yep, man.
Started with the thing that gets your interest first, because then, like, I would probably start with the world has been plunged into a forever darkness. In fact, start with that idea.
See, I could also say that's trite, though. Like, the world's plunged by darkness, you know?
Or you could say, like, start with the idea of the eternal fire that is keeping the last remnants of civilization alive.
Start with the hook.
I think that's the best part of this, is going, like, okay, I'm now thinking about how this world would operate of there is no light, only this one fire. Mm. How do you have to carry it with you? I can imagine all the different mechanisms that you'd have to go around that imagine like you're, I can imagine an adventure and story of like going out into this forever dark world and having to keep your fire and imagining like it dwindling and you have to find fuel and
You're selling me.
I can imagine walking out to the darkness of like that fire goes out, you're dead.
Yeah.
And like, that's your forever life. Like there's a weird sense of panic around it that I think would be great tension. A strong gust of wind could ruin you. So like you have to protect. Can you imagine like most of the fire goes out, but you're able to save a little bit of it. I can imagine like someone destroys the fire or destroys the casing. And instead of letting the fire go out, you jump on the fire to catch yourself alight, to let yourself burn so your friends can still survive, to provide fuel to the fire. Like you could add more like
definitely has the situation. You can put
fire
situations
preferable to the darkness. There's some cool stuff to there that I like a lot.
Nice.
Definitely could be spooky, isolating, tension filled. And things I just see like this world could lead to a really cool story.
Yes, and that's the key of
like would it lead to like a 10 book series? Maybe not. Probably not. Like I see like
you could stretch anything.
You could stretch anything, sure.
If Robert Jordan taught us anything.
kind of, but also he just had lots of ideas that he needed to keep.
Fair enough,
with.
You know.
Also, his whole thing is if people were competent, it would be a trilogy. People are not competent. So it's 14 books. Yeah. Fair enough.
Just put anyway. An incompetent character in this world, big series. I think with this one, I'll give a comfortable 3.5 with this. Good.
I'm thinking a 3.75. I'm really liking it.
Fair enough.
I think it's really good.
Okay. Yeah. So 7.25 overall score. Very good, Josh. Very good. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice job. This next one we have is from Will. And Will, he liked, there's this one episode where you had a shark shirt on. You know the shark shirt you own?
No. I have a shirt with a shark on it?
Yep. A lot of mini sharks. And it's kind of a polo button up.
Oh,
see, the shark shirt.
I do have a shirt. Well, no, that's the brand. Like, it's a polo, but it has a shark on it.
He likes it quite a lot.
Do I have one with multiple sharks on it?
I guess he said you had a lot of sharks on it.
Fair enough. I'll wear the shirt.
Want to let you know that he complimented you before I gave the world, so you can give it a higher rating.
Good.
So, Will, I'm giving
I am open to be bought.
I'm teeing you up, Will. So if you don't win this, you're just bad. Okay, so this is the world-building idea from Will. Thank you for pitching this, and here we go. A magical doomsday weapon was unleashed by the Drentir war mage Kamur the Black on an elven city-state 300 years ago, displacing those who survived and forcing them to flee their homes, becoming refugees in the neighboring human lands. The weapon tore a rift in the reality, creating a great black scar between the world of mortal races and the realms of death. Worse still, the rift never healed. The subsequent wave of necrotic mage warped all under its shadow, killing those directly underneath it and trapping their souls, unable to pass on. This area of perpetual darkness didn't just nullify the elven war effort, effectively swinging the balance of favor of the Drentiri, but also broke the spirit of those who fled. Millennia of arts, arcane sciences, familial wealth, and heritage remain left behind, unattainable by the peoples who brought it forth. For any elf who lingers under the blackened scourge risks having...
Scourge.
This is great. risks having their souls tainted and losing their place in the bright halls of their ancestors in the beyond. Now they must rely on other races to reclaim what was lost. Now they must weigh the cost of sending others into the blackened scourge.
Scourge.
That's just how I say scourge, I guess, at this point, is to reclaim what they cannot. Both the monetary cost of the strain on their conscience.
Monetary.
What did I say?
Moonateer.
No, I didn't. Fuck you. Okay. Those who are willing to make the journey, if they return, do so changed, colder, harsher, and often with either warped, vague memories of what lays underneath the rift or not at all. Others never return at all. Well, sorry for the butchering of Rich there when he rudely interrupted my perfect retelling of that. I'll do better. So with that, do you have any thoughts? Or do you want me to...
could have been generic beginning, but I liked it more than others.
What stood out to you?
Main thing is the generic thing was quick and then got into more specifics of like Kamor the Black on an elven city state 300 years ago. Like just that, those specifics of it made it feel less generic. You know what I mean? Instead of like the sun and moon god. Like that's just too generic, where I like giving that, okay, magical doomsday weapon, Drentyr War Mage Kamor the Black. It just added more to
it.
So I didn't feel as generic in the beginning. Overall, the store, I like the idea of the elves kind of, the elves can't reclaim their homeland and have to send other races to do it. I could just imagine some interesting settings of, I don't know, I like that idea of they can't even go back to their homeland and they have to send out people. And how does that affect them? And how does that affect the, I could just imagine the placement of that, of the resentment and also maybe the feeling of superiority conflict.
Yeah.
Imagine a group of people and they set a group of humans to actually reconquer a section. And they do. They win. Will they give it back to the elves? And now the elves are going like, hey, we fought for all, why can't the elves just, like, they're not willing to even reconquer their own land. And so, I don't know. I like that.
Okay.
I imagine cool character stuff in there.
Yeah, I could see a lot of those situations you're saying. Again, I think the pattern here for the good stuff is you can imagine immediately a cool story concept comes to your head. It seems like you latch onto something and go, oh, what if?
Mm-hmm.
What if this could happen in the world? I think, you know, I don't dislike anything about it. I just think when maybe it was my reading of it, because I paused, was kind of immersing myself out of it. But I'm feeling pretty average. I'll go with 3 on this one. But I will say the thing with dragons that can be repetitive and kind of trite can happen with elves, and it didn't do that. That was kind of cool.
Yeah, I like their presence, but also they have to be a little bit separate. They can't be involved in their own, you know, not resurrection, but they can't be involved in their own redemption. So they have to use the races of other people to actually conquer back their land.
Yeah, so it's cool. And it's not your typical Tolkien elves, you know. It distinguishes itself, which is cool. Mm-hmm. So I'll go 3.25. 3.25.
I'll give it 3.5.
Oh, there you go. What is that together? 6.75? Yes. About there. Okay. So, Will, also, thank you for the submission.
Someone
there.
Wins because you're bad at math.
Will, you won. You win the prize. Okay. This next one is from Sean, spelled S-I-A-N. If you want to read off Sean, thank you for the submission.
Yep. Uh-oh. Another dragon one. I saw the first two words. I'm like, dragons. I'm like, let's see.
Good luck. Okay.
Good luck,
you,
Sean.
You heard us this whole episode, so... Will we lay into Sean? I don't know. Okay, here we go.
House dragons are small-sized dragons, larger than a squirrel, but a lot smaller than a mule. Although their name suggests a suiting to houses, they are rather temperamental, so do not make themselves best pets. A word of warning, many towns require writs of ownership due to their challenging nature and obvious risks to ignitability. They are particularly helpful within workshops using the controlled flow of flame to work a furnace. However, they should be carefully monitored as they are partial to eating the materials being used, such as bioluminescent mosses, although they wouldn't like to admit it. They do not like to be caught out or told what to do, and either of these things can result in a cantankerous demeanor, which will last for hours. They are partial to a hot cup of coffee, depending on preference, as well as a good book on which to rest their head. Care needs to be taken, though, as they are not always in control of their flame. Any efforts to mimic a sigh or similar, such as trying to blow on an aforementioned hot beverage, are met with plumes of smoke exuding from the edges of their mouth. Unless trained or caught early enough when it happens, this can lead to unfortunate accidents, such as rapid hair loss or, hopefully, unintentional house combustion. They can make either a wonderful companion or a consuming fiery menace. That just depends on their mood and any given point of time. cozy dragon fantasy.
I was going to say those same three words.
Yeah.
You know what I like about this is less so the world and more so the emotional impact and feel. I think this is a great, fun, cozy story to read, and I'd have such a good time with this story. I would have so fun. Who doesn't like animal companion dragon that's cute but also a little bit unhinged because, you know, might burn some hair here and there, might burn down a house, but they're cute and they help.
Dragons are destroying the world. It's just
it's larger or smaller than a mule. You know, they're tiny things.
They're
there to help. So cute. As a story, emotionally, I could really get behind a story like this.
Yeah.
World building wise, what would you say about the world itself with the dragons who seem cute, not completely tame, but help society? So
interesting direction, and I like the direction of it. Yeah. I would want something more. You know what I mean? Of not just small, kind of rambunctious dragon. Mm. Something a little bit to gnash on. I don't know. Mm. It's either a hook for the idea or something that would describe more of a tone. So the tone is already set, but I would say maybe in a better presentation of the idea, it would come across better and give a better tone. But yeah, as far as the idea on its own, 2.75. That's where I'm.
It does go. It could be a 10-book series very easily, but not for the world reason. You know, it's just more for cozy fun. Yeah, so
cozy tone.
You know, because it was cute enough, I'll give it a 3.
Fair enough.
I would love to read that story. So that is a 5.75. Math checks out. We're both bad at math.
I'm just going to let you go.
I think that's a 5.75.
See, I want plausible deniability of I'm never responsible. Like, you get it
is
wrong.
Is that your new shtick?
If I don't say anything, then I can't be blamed.
That's why virtue itself and honor is only done through action and confronting something. Because you can just be a virtueless, you know, you could never do or search for anything in life. You could never actually make an action that would make you look good or bad. But then you would just be nothing. And sometimes being nothing is preferable to being looked down upon and downcast by society. So maybe you won't be bold enough to go ask out the girl. Maybe you won't be bold enough to say, hey, Rich, you know what? That shark shirt, he might have liked it, but I fucking hated it. Some people
That's what makes a great student. A great student is one that is willing to look foolish by asking a stupid question. If you're not willing to ask stupid questions, you're probably not going to be a very good student. Generally, it's... If you're too afraid to look silly in front of others, you're not that curious.
The confidence versus arrogance.
Well, it's
because
it just
a confidence person can
your fear
realize
your fear of social isolation overshadows your curiosity and desire for knowledge.
Yeah, the arrogant person would go out and say something and like be stubborn enough to go, okay, no, I'm refuse to acknowledge that they're wrong or refuse to acknowledge. Yeah, there's a difference between someone being too afraid or introverted or shy or coy to say something.
Is an arrogant person, which
arrogant person would
they ask a question, already knowing the answer just to sound smart?
Yeah, not looking to actually learn itself, but just going because they want to show they're knowledgeable itself. But you know what? Ended up having a little conversation. So I think that this whole cozy fantasy thing, again, evokes something in us. But world-wise, not bad. You know, good job. Okay, actually, neutral job. We didn't say 3.5 is good.
I was just under. Slightly disappointed. Want more. 2.75.
Oh,
that's what I said.
Yeah, okay. Very next one is from Matthew, who loves Joe Abercrombie. Okay. This Matthew one here. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
This is, okay.
I was looking at time. This is going to be a long one.
No, it'll just be a two-parter. You think we're giving them the answer this episode? We're already almost coming an hour in.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be a two-parter.
No, I don't want to do a two-parter.
This could be like two-plus hours.
Maybe.
We might have to.
If it's a two-part, it's not under my control. It's just happened.
Oh, again, you bastard! What the fuck?
You love that?
You're doing really good right now.
I know.
Okay. Matthew, this is. Did you read that last one? Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Okay. Matthew, this is Matthew's submission. Here we go. My world building idea is a magic system taught to have three core principles: convincing, commanding, and betraying. Convincing is the result of detailed study of the world and then convincing it to change in the way you want it. Commanding is using force of will to force the world to change. Example, if you want to change a rock, move it, turn it to gold, etc., it takes less force of will if you have studied the rock and what you want to do to it. The greater the magic you want to do, the more study you will need. Betraying is using spirits to change the world and is called such because you are betraying your humanity by giving your will over to the spirit. Wizards who use mostly convincing, they are the super nerds and write to each other academic-like papers, and some commanding and rare and powerful, while shamans who use spirits are hated and hunted.
I like it.
Okay.
Couple basic ideas. But here's the thing why I really like it is I want more.
Okay, my
that's
gut...
That's the thing. My gut was like,
you know, my gut for most of these, the ones that started off generic and got like, oh, there's a convincing thing. Mine started good and got a little lower by the end. Because I think the cooler ones were convincing, commanding. The betraying one, I'm not as interested in. Did betraying interest you? Want to learn more about that? Because
I want to know why, by giving over your will over to a spirit. Like,
yeah,
I can see that of the first two being when it sets up the great path of like, you know, hard work, virtue versus the easy path of
temptation.
Yep. So already good setup for that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And I can it leads to a bunch of good settings.
Yeah.
I thought magic wise for convincing, commanding, very similar to both Name of the Wind and Stormlight.
I was thinking Name of the Wind for to sympathy in Name of the Wind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very similar. Yep. But yeah, I like it. I like it more than it's hard for me to articulate about it. I think it makes me question. I want to know more about how this works and what it would lead to.
Okay.
So I'm going to give it a 3.75.
Maybe
I thought it was really good.
Biggest disagreement. I think I'm going to give below average, 2.75. I think the convincing and commanding, like you said, maybe he's at just read Name of the Wind pretty recently.
Sure.
The sympathy's in my head a little bit. It's definitely different. And I think the convincing, commanding, seeing how you could actually, you would need more study to change something. I guess I want to see more clear.
I imagine a cool history
of
this famous commanding general that has no intellectual merit at all, but through sheer force of will had one of the strongest commanding powers and was able to command boulders out of his way. Of that kind of strength of will is just, it leads that cool setup of history to magic versus someone who maybe studies. Cool balance between both.
I could see that.
So
yeah, I think with this, I would need a little bit more in depth to, and also didn't use all the word count. Could have been a little bit more, Matthew, because with some of the explanation on how convincing, commanding works. So he said here, by changing a rock, move it, turn it to gold, etc. That the more you study, the better you get at it. I'm someone who likes my good limitations and flaws and something there. I didn't see enough of that. I'm looking for more of, okay, the more you study, the more you get at it. What's a little nugget you could throw in there to make the magic itself a little bit more interesting to how you compel something to change over time? Like, what is it about just studying? You know, study, get better, cool, but something else there, you know?
Fair enough.
Yeah. So I'll get to give a 2.75. Below average for me, because I feel like I've been being a little nice, and I'm the bad guy this episode, so I might as well lean into my role.
I feel like I've been the negative Nancy though. So
generally,
far. Yeah.
We've rated things. I'm right now typing in math. Okay, 6.5 is still. I'm real bad at this. Okay, here we go. We got 6.5 for that. Now, we have this next one from our guy, Zeke.
Hey, Zeke.
I don't know who Zeke is.
I don't know.
But Zeke, thank
Hopefully
you for submitting
Zeke's
this.
Watching. Yeah.
Zeke, thank you for submitting this. Now, Rich, do you want to say this one?
I already read the last one.
Didn't I? Yes, it's my turn then.
Yeah,
right?
It's your turn.
Wait, really? Are you gaslighting me to convince? No, I...
Did you read it? Scroll up again?
Yeah, my world is convinced. I definitely read that.
Oh, okay.
I think I did.
I was willing to I convinced myself that I convinced and changed the world around me by my force of will.
Okay.
No, I did read it.
All right. Here's Zeke's. Yep.
Zeke, I'll read it. Setting idea. A land where the sky is constantly overcast with numerous successive layers of clouds and clear air between them. When the cloud layers are thin, they allow diffuse sunlight through for plant life. But when the cloud layers thicken, sunlight dims and plant life begins to suffer. The only way the cloud layers thin down and allow light through is via raining, but the clouds will not rain on their own. They will have to be physically pierced by copper ore. If physical copper ore touches a cloud layer, it enables the clouds in the immediate vicinity to let loose rain when they become laden with moisture. Due to this reality, humans have built hundreds of tall spire-like towers with pure copper spines that reach through the highest layers of the clouds, allowing the rain cycles to function. The more towers built in a region, the more plant life thrives. Because the more rain cycles occur, well, areas with fewer towers receive less rain and less sunlight, and by extension, less healthy plant life. From the ground, these rain towers, as they are called, look like massive constructions that rise into the cloud layers and disappear. However, for tower keepers who climb to the peaks, they look down on vast blankets of white that glow in the light of the unhindered sun. And at night, a million stars shine brightly, unseen by mankind below. I like this world.
Really neat end, too. I'm a setting guy. Did you get convinced by the setting?
Yeah.
Yeah. Very cool.
Not heavily complex, but just great setting.
That just gave me.
I'm giving it 4.5.
Wow,
I like it a lot. Picturesque.
Whoa,
I like it.
4.5.
Whoa.
I look like an asshole this video.
I like it.
You know what?
I like it a lot.
3.75, really good.
Okay,
it's really good. I don't.
You're the asshole.
I'm not tossing out 4.5s here. Like, what are we handing out?
Yeah, I think it's spectacular. It's great.
You know, it's
cool idea.
Really cool idea.
Yeah,
I agree. Okay.
The setting worked for me.
Very cool. Since you love it that much, what's about it? Like, what could you imagine? Because you did a good idea of imagining a type of character or type of plot that could happen. What are you imagining happens in this setting?
Well, like the tower watchers are just. That really convinced me about it, of them climbing up to these towers and seeing and like maintaining the clouds for rain. Cool setting. I can also just see some interesting politicking of the world below, and just I can imagine a character is an apprentice, like you can have the apprentice tower watcher, and you know, he is able to climb up to the top layers. Like, what's the mystery of these layers? Maybe each layer acts a little differently. And you just get a different view. I don't know. Maybe like society is actually like, you know, people can live at different cloud layers. Like the ultra wealthy are able to see the stars, and the stars are a privilege of the rich. Could have that.
Like a little red rising aspect.
Plenty of cool stuff can be done here. I just see so much of literally a hierarchy structure can be there.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's just the visual aspect of it. The people on the ground can never see the sky.
That's what got me too. That's
great.
I love a good setting where Wave King Shattered Plains, you can visualize it and then put your... And as soon as I will think of this setting, this world now, it's boom. Oh, I could imagine this anywhere. You give a couple big world details and then you kind of fill in the rest of the blanks.
Mm-hmm. Also, I can see it filled with good whimsy. You know?
Oh, yeah. Just it could be fun.
Very vast, mystical wonder.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really like it.
Zeke, really good job.
Great job, Zeke.
He thinks spectacular job. I'm saying, hey, really good. Really good job.
Blame him. That's the reason why you're not winning.
If we learned anything this episode,
blame Austin.
I think it's blame me, and you're going to have to blame me for one more thing. We will see you next week, next episode.
Really?
For part 2.
We can do a 2-hour video. Why not?
We're pushing. We still got over half of them to do. It would be like 2.5 hours, 3. You know, co-sign me with this, or do you want to keep going? It's your time.
Smart.
It's your time.
Smart. You're
to
putting
make a
it
decision.
On me. You know what? I stand with my podcast host. Now it's both of our faults.
What a character arc.
Yeah.
This is.
I'll take responsibility.
You had a little character arc. I became the villain, but I had a villain join me.
I feel like I was the villain in the beginning. I thought I was negative Nancy in the beginning.
I still think I came off like more of the dick in this
one. Okay, good.
You know what? I'll give you this 99%. You're more of the dick in the other ones. I'll give you every other episode.
That is true. I am the larger
the pretentious
dick on this channel.
Next episode. Bye.
Bye all.
we'll see you next time. We'll finish this up and determine our winner, because right now Maj is winning with 9.
I don't want him to win. I don't want him
next,
to
we're
win.
Determined.
I'm determined to find some positivity at the. If we don't get to something number 25, we're gonna have to stretch.
We're
it.
Just gonna go 5 stars.
5 stars.
We're bullshitting at that point.
Yeah.
All right. See you all next episode.
Bye all.
Bye bye.
Save big money on your next project right now at Menards. Give your home an elegant look with Mastercraft pre-finished hardwood molding. Available in 5 pre-finished colors to save you time. Just cut and install for a simple upgrade to any room. Save big on all Mastercraft molding products. And don't forget to check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
At your job, do you ever have to deal with a nose roller? How about a snub pulley? Well, if you're installing a new conveyor belt system, dealing with the different components can sound like you're speaking a foreign language. Luckily, you've got a team ready to help. Grainger's technical product specialists are fluent in maintenance, repair, and operations. So whenever you want to talk shop, just reach out. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.